This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. This weekend, freshly made slabs of steel began moving through Granite City Works. It's a sign of hope for the steel mill and the more than 1,000 people who work there, people who've spent years waiting and watching as U.S. presidents, companies, and labor leaders fight over the future of the mill. That future is still uncertain, but the return to steelmaking at Granite City Works is a big deal, even as it sets up the next stages of a struggle that's playing out in the global economy. And to talk about that, we're joined by Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio's Metro East reporter. Will, welcome back.
Hey, Lane. Thanks for having me.
And also joining us is Craig McKee, president of United Steelworkers Local 1899. Craig, it's good to have you back on the show as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Elaine.
So, Will, it was in December of last year that U.S. Steel announced it would restart steelmaking in Granite City. Remind us why the mill's two blast furnaces were idled in the first place.
Yeah, well, maybe the simple answer is economics and market conditions. So in 2019, U.S. Steel would have said there were challenging market conditions. And then in 2023, when they idled the second blast furnace, they said declining customer demand. And at the time, they had initially said the United Auto Workers strike, which was ongoing, lasted about 46 days, was one of the reasons why there was less customer demand. Now, of course, Craig and the union folks said, we don't buy it, but that was one of the reasons they gave about why they were idling the second blast furnace in 2023.
Now, Craig, you were on the show only a couple months before the announcement that steelmaking would return to Granite City, and this was October of 2025. Now, it seems like there was it was a very difficult time for the workers. You said that many had lost hope and were starting to look for other employment. What was that period like for you, Craig, and the workers that you represent?
Yeah, I mean, by that point, you know, we'd been out for over 2 years. A lot of hardships come with that for the members and, you know, everybody involved here at the mill, management also. You know, we was hoping the last time I was on and spoke that something might change. We kind of thought that there was a need to add capacity by, you know, starting Granite back up, and thankfully, you know, only a few months later that happened.
So a couple of years where people are not working as they were. I mean, why was hope waning when I spoke with you back in the fall?
Well, if you remember, I spoke maybe a little bit about the Golden Share Agreement that came about when the Trump administration approved the sale in June of 25, I believe. There was a reference in that agreement that Granite couldn't be sold or idled prior to June of 27. So, you know, because that was put in there, myself, the rest of the local union leadership, and our members included, all didn't know what that meant for us. You know, we thought that maybe the end of the road might be that date they put in the agreement. Being that, you know, this is the third time I've personally went through the up and down here at the mill, there were a lot of us that thought that maybe they weren't going to utilize us moving forward, especially since Nippon took over the company.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get back to the Golden Share in just a few moments. What is it, though, that you are hearing right now from workers? You know, what has their reaction been to one of these two blast furnaces restarting?
Well, they're all ecstatic. Like I said, we had several members that terminated their employment, found other jobs. A lot of them have came back. The folks that stuck around and even the new employees. I mean, it's just a great opportunity for us to get back to work and show the new parent company, Nippon Steel, what it is we're capable of doing, because as the past has shown, every time we've gotten this opportunity, we've had a pretty good road ahead of us for some period of time after we've started up. So, you know, that's kind of the hopes, and we're going to remain optimistic that we're going to hit and do what Nippon expects us to do, and hopefully that gives us some longevity.
Mm-hmm. Craig, how is it that you got the news that U.S. Steel was restarting the blast furnace this weekend?
So December of last year, I got a call from District Director Millsap, who is on the negotiating team with U.S. Steel, and told me that they intended on firing up B blast furnace. So it was probably 2 or 3 days after that, U.S. Steel actually made the announcement.
And what were your thoughts and feelings when you received the news? And who did you talk to?
Well, we have an executive board, so they was the first that I had reached out to, seeing how we was going to hear that news. But, I mean, even just to talk about it today, just an overwhelming feeling of getting that opportunity to make steel here in Granite again, and also knowing the pitfalls of trying to get, you know, hundreds of employees in here to fill spots that are needed to do just that. So happiness, sadness, a little fear, I mean, pretty much is the whole host of emotions, which I definitely welcome.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that the reactivation started in the wee hours at 2 a.m. on Saturday. Why at that time?
Well, so there's a process we go through starting up. They announced in December we had a whole host of work to be done to the blast furnace itself, get folks in here, train them at least what we could train in simulation for the job. So it just kind of all that stuff to get together. They was shooting for an April 1st startup date, and we actually came in a little ahead of that. We was actually casting, I believe, Friday evening. We actually ran some heats.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today with Craig McKee. He's the president of Granite City Steelworkers Union, and with STLPR reporter Will Bauer, and we're discussing the reopening of a blast furnace at Granite City Works Steel Mill. Now, Will, let's get into the why of this blast furnace reopening. And in September, you'd reported that U.S. Steel was planning to move its operations from the Metro East to Indiana and Pennsylvania, and that move would essentially close Granite City Works. Then just days later, U.S. Secretary Howard Lutnick said that President Donald Trump had intervened and that Granite City's steel mill would remain open. So remind us, Will, about what happened with that reversal? And do we know if Trump warrants that credit?
So I'll maybe first start with the actual sale that would have kind of set up this agreement for the what's known as the golden share. So Nippon buys U.S. Steel for nearly $15 billion. That was a deal that then President Joe Biden had said he didn't support, he would block it. Trump actually, during the 2024 election, said the exact same thing, but last year, Trump would have kind of softened on that position, given that the new Japanese ownership had agreed to make a bunch of investments across the board at all the U.S. facilities, notably not Granite City, and they were also going to allow the Trump administration to have what we call the golden share. And basically, that gives the Trump administration a seat on U.S. Steel's board, and it gives them veto power. So Craig was kind of mentioning how for all other locations, they are contractually protected until 2035. But for Granite City, for whatever reason, it's June 2027, not 2035. Fast forward to September of last year. Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, says on CNBC they blocked U.S. Steel's plan to close one plant. Presumably, we assume this is Granite City just based on the way he's talking, but he never actually says Granite City. Wall Street Journal, a couple of days later, says that Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, actually calls the CEO of U.S. Steel, David Burritt, and says, "We're going to block it if you do it." But on a CBS interview a couple months later, David Burritt is asked very plainly, did the Trump administration exercise their veto power? And he says no. So maybe if we're reading into the tea leaves of this, they didn't actually use the golden share, but they maybe just threatened it. But then again, I don't know if there's a really definitive way to answer that question, because it's very much a he said, he said scenario. So in short, U.S. Steel reverses course last December. They'll keep processing. And then we get the other news, what Craig and a lot of the other union folks would say was pretty good news, that they're just going to restart one of the two blast furnaces in December.
Craig, for you and the folks that you are representing, is the golden share I mean, does it seem like that is what was responsible for the blast furnace restarting this weekend, or is it kind of besides the point in some ways?
Well, just to back up a little bit, our blast furnaces and steel producing was idled prior to Nippon getting approval by the company. Mm-hmm. So what the deal was with the production, that it appears the Trump administration got involved in, was just finishing. We had currently been shipping slabs here in Granite and running through our finishing mills. They announced that they was going to stop shipping slabs here, and because of the conversations that Will just spoke about, which is kind of he said, she said, we know they reversed course on that. I think personally the restart of our blast furnace is because probably has something to do with demand going up here in the States because of the administration's tariffs on steel. And also that, you know, we've been saying for a long time that, you know, they needed more capacity within the company, and really we're the only place that they could turn to do that. I know they tried everything they could probably not to have to fire our steel producing up, but I think coming into this year, they noticed with their customer base and other things that there was really no way around it. They needed to add some more steelmaking capacity.
Mm-hmm. Now, Will, this is not the end of the uncertainty for Granite City Works. And you mentioned earlier there's a discrepancy or a difference, that is, in the dates. You reported that the Trump administration protection of Granite City Works, it runs out in 2027, which is just around the corner, even though other mills have protection until 2035. So what are your insights into the Granite City Mill being treated differently?
We don't have a great answer, and Craig, correct me if I'm wrong or if you know something that I don't, but it's a question that I've definitely probably asked Craig or other steelworkers quite a bit. There is definitely a belief, though, that there is a non-unionized facility just down the Mississippi River in Arkansas that's north of Memphis. And as part of the Nippon takeover of U.S. Steel, they've announced $3 billion of investments in that facility. And so if it's a newer facility, right, newer technology, cheaper labor, they may be a little more interested in building up that demand down there, or that production down there, I should say. But yeah, it's definitely the difference in timeline that leaves folks in the Metro East kind of questioning, why are we different than everyone else? And, you know, does that mean that there's going to be something happening to us that's not happening to other locations?
Mm-hmm. Craig, you mentioned earlier that some people who did look for and find work elsewhere have come back. What is your sense of where those folks were going and why they are returning to Granite City?
Well, I think at the end of the day, they had to find some other jobs. Some of the benefits that we have negotiated in our contract were coming to an end, and it's, you know, it's kind of hard to put food on the table and pay your bills. So most of them were forced to look for other employment. And I think the reason they are returning is, you know, obviously, it's a good job, probably one of the better ones in the area, and what they had found couldn't add up to what they could get by coming back here. So, and the company actually waived some starter rates of pay and did a few other things to kind of entice those folks to come back.
Mm-hmm. Craig, you yourself, you are a steel worker, and you've seen this before, this going back to the 2000s, the cycle of shutting down of blast furnaces, then restarting them again. Does this time feel different in some way?
Well, we're always wondering what, you know, what our future is. Unfortunately, Granite City, the mill here, is kind of like the bottom of the totem pole as far as where we're at within this company. So when demand drops off or price goes down, we usually feel the brunt of that first. And we're usually the one that gets taken offline first. You know, we think a lot about what that 27 date meant when it was put into the Golden Share. Will, you may remember this. I believe it was in 22 or 23, the company announced that they had intentions of selling the blast furnaces to SunCoke. So we kind of thinking that that reference was in case they didn't need us to make steel, that they could sell the assets in 27. I personally, and this is just speculation on my part, think that that date is irrelevant now that we've got this startup. But we go into contract bargaining this year, so hopefully the company can give us some insight into what the long-term outlook is for where we fit inside the company.
Mm-hmm. Will, do you have anything to add to that?
No. I think that's that's something we've definitely been watching with the SunCoke deal, and so that's interesting. And Craig's probably said that to me before, but I forgot that he said that. So we'll keep an eye on it.
You've been talking with one another for quite some time now.
Craig's probably very tired of talking to me.
You, Will.
Yeah. What questions or developments are you looking for next, Will?
Well, I'll be really curious, as Craig was just saying, to see what comes of the summer's start of negotiations over the next contract. Will U.S. Steel, under the new leadership, make any investments in Granite City? Would they ever, and this is not something I've talked to Craig about, but would they ever consider restarting the first blast furnace, Blast Furnace A?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, maybe June 2027 is relevant now that they've invested all this money in restarting the second blast furnace, but what happens after that?
Mm-hmm. Craig, what do you think? Second blast furnace, what would have to happen in order for that to be restarted?
Well, I think the demand, the pricing, and the need would be there, would need to be there. There is speculation that they may come back and restart a blast furnace at some point. The company hasn't validated that, and it could be some time out. But it's all pretty much going to go, as I said, what the need is with the company to have our capacity online.
Mm-hmm. And as we close, Craig, is there something that you witnessed that you were part of, maybe with the second with the blast furnace restarting over the weekend, that sort of gives us a picture of what this means for steelworkers and their families?
Well, as I said, it's huge. I mean, when we're running, not only are we contributing to the community in that way, but life is pretty good as far as what we got in our basic labor agreement as far as pay and benefits and things like that. So what I would, like to share with the folks is, our members that stuck around, the members that are coming on board, which is upwards of about 400 to this point since they announced in December. My hat's off to all of them to successfully restart processes like a blast furnace or steelmaking operations that's been, idled for over 2 years is just a tremendous thing. And from where we're at, I mean, we've had a lot of hurdles getting started back up, but we've successfully did that. Now it's just a matter of making sure that it gets stable and we can do it day in, day out, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day.
Craig McKee is president of United Steelworkers 1899, and Will Bauer is St. Louis Public Radio's Metro East reporter. Thank you both for talking with us today.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.